Something wicked is coming this way, and only fools are ignoring the signs. So it's time you became a financial prepper like thousands of others. Gold can travel anywhere. It's international. It's its own currency. Allocate to gold now, the timeless safe haven asset. Open an IRA with Noble Gold Investments to physically hold coins and bars, and let real, tangible gold, not just paper, save your portfolio as the economy burns again. Right now, Noble Gold Investments offers a free 3-ounce silver American Virtue coin with every qualified IRA. Just use the promo code GOLD to claim your free coin and secure your family's financial future. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com now. NobleGoldInvestments.com.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
RPN is not responsible for the views, actions, statements, or opinions of its guests, advertisers, or even its viewers. The information contained in this program is not to be confused with medical or legal advice. An appearance on this platform is not necessarily an endorsement, but as always, we encourage you to do your own research. Enjoy the show.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Red Pill News Live. And a big congratulations to Mr. Anderson Lives for quitting his job today. Hopefully, you've got something else lined up. Either way, if it's what makes you happy, you got to follow your heart. So I want to address a comment that Master D. Bader just popped in to leap, drop, and then leave. He just says he won't win because we the people don't do anything about a criminal government that steals elections. We are the problem. No man can save the country. It takes a nation. Well, no shit. Obviously, you haven't been watching my show. But my question to you is, what are you doing other than showing up in chats and just telling people they're not doing enough? Because it sounds like you're the problem. The nation is waking up. The nation is asking for accountability. And Trump will win. Not because he's our savior and he's the only man who can save us, but it does take a leader at the helm to march an army into battle. And that's it. So, do me a favor. Hit that like button. Share the show. Help us out by putting this program on your favorite social media platforms. And without further ado, sit back, relax, and grab your popcorn, because we're going to be right back after this. So recently, I've told you guys about a breakthrough new anti-aging remedy that I've been using that keeps me energized all day long. I just take a teaspoonful of C60 Evo olive oil in the morning, and I notice better mental focus, flexibility, and physical endurance. Now, it's rare to feel improvements this quickly. I also end up sleeping deeper at night, so it's really helpful. Their peptide and ESS60 hair and lotion renewal formulas are exceptional because they really work. And C60 Evo's lab has been manufacturing this Nobel Prize-winning miracle molecule for 32 years in their Houston, Texas, Patriot-owned lab. ESS60 is the upgraded version of the carbon-60 molecule. It's specifically made for both people and pets. It's a potent and effective way for people's lives to be improved all around the world. So maximize your health and enjoy noticeable results with C60 Evo organic edible oils, skin serums, and pet products. You can buy with confidence from C60 Evo, and you can use my personal code for a discount at checkout. Simply go to c60evo.com/redpill78. And then when you're there, use code redpill78 for an additional 10% off your entire order. Once again, that's c60evo.com/redpill78. And when you support my sponsors, you support this channel. All right, welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for joining us. Just there for the truth, says Zach. Your energy level wears me out. Well, it's a good thing I've got a lot of energy to go around, so if it's sapping yours, I really don't know what to say. All you need to do is sit back and enjoy the show, and hopefully you're out there in your own community trying to make a difference. You guys, I have so many good stories lined up for you today, and I want to start with something that's very, very close to my heart. You know, 3 years ago, over 3 years ago, when I was in Washington, D.C. for January 6th, on the day of, when I learned about this guy by the name of Jaden X, John Sullivan, an Antifa imposter pretending to be a Trump supporter, riling up Trump supporters and telling people to storm the Capitol and getting a lot of video footage with his girlfriend from CNN. I think her name is Jade something or other. Anyways, he sold that footage for like $90,000. And over the last couple of years, I think a lot of people were assuming that absolutely nothing would happen to John Sullivan, a.k.a. Jaden X, because it doesn't ever seem like anything happens to Antifa people. It doesn't happen to anybody on the left. They only want to hold the people on the right accountable. Well, as it turns out, John Sullivan, a.k.a. Jaden X's profile was just a little too high. That's right. He flew just a bit too close to the sun because just this past week in the state of Utah, John Sullivan learned that he was going to spend several years in prison for the Capitol riot that took place on January 6th. Yes, that's right. You heard me correctly. John Sullivan has been sentenced to 6 years in federal prison for his role in what is being known as the January 6th Capitol Insurrection. Now, I will call it the Capitol Insurrection when it comes to John Sullivan because he went in there with a plan. It was his hope that he was going to rile up Trump supporters and get them to behave badly. So if anybody committed insurrection, it's John Sullivan. It's also Ray Epps. Now, Ray Epps basically got away with a slap on the wrist. So I just got to say it feels really good to know that someone who deserves it is actually going to prison. Now, this trial was overseen by Judge Royce C. Lamberth. He also gave Sullivan 36 months of supervised release once he gets out and $2,500 in restitution. Now, another reason many people assumed nothing would happen to John Sullivan is because his father is a high-profile colonel. But likely his father actually loves America and is pretty annoyed by his dopey adopted son. And so he was more than happy to allow John to get his comeuppance. So this conviction has been a long time coming because it was actually last year that he was convicted on all seven counts by a Utah jury. That included three charges related to carrying a weapon, a knife. If you might remember, during the actual video footage that he was taking on January 6th, he can be heard saying, you know, let me in, I've got a knife, I've got a knife, you know, indicating that he's going to do some damage or some type of overt harm to people. He was also accused of a number of accounts of his interruption of Congress during their alleged vote to certify the U.S. presidential election on that fateful day. Now, we all know the results of that that hearing in Congress. I mean, it was already a foregone conclusion. It was the action of January 6th that was designed to kill any support that Donald Trump may have had to challenge those electoral votes on that day. And, of course, John Sullivan and a number of other Antifa infiltrators helped to ensure that that would take place. So John is a 29-year-old man. He's rather young. He'll be in his mid-30s by the time he gets out of prison. And he was one of the very first people who was initially arrested in the wake of the events that took place in D.C. on that day. He's also the guy who got the footage of Ashley Babbitt being shot and killed. He was previously known before this incident as Jaden X. He had a group called Insurgents USA, and he would frequently show up at protests and scream about social justice and wanting to tear Trump out of the White House. John Sullivan is a real piece of work, and I can't tell you how happy I am to know that he's going to be going to prison. It couldn't be happening to a nicer guy. So he actually did testify in his own defense in the wake of this trial, and he's always maintained that he only went to the Capitol because he believed there was going to be violence, and he was going to help stop it. He was going to stop the evil Trump supporters from not allowing the election to be certified, and he just wanted to film the altercations. He didn't want to have anything to do with it. Well, here's the thing. He sold that footage, as I said, for $90,000 to a number of mainstream media outlets. And as the prosecutors so succinctly said in the midst of this trial, John Sullivan's own videos and his own words on those videos betrayed him. Not only was he heard and videotaped encouraging the crowd to engage in mob-like behavior, he also mentioned, I've got a knife, lift me up. He wanted to be one of those that went inside the Capitol and hopefully to do some damage against an officer of the United States government. So they also called a number of other witnesses besides John Sullivan. That included a Salt Lake City-based FBI agent. He was the same FBI agent that interviewed Sullivan shortly after he returned to Utah. There was also a number of witnesses who had testified in previous trials in regards to January 6th. There was a Capitol Police officer. He described the crowd on that day. There was also a Secret Service agent who also discussed the crowd. I believe it was a Secret Service agent for then Vice President Mike Pence. So at the sentencing, the prosecutors had asked for 87 months. The defense, of course, they're going to ask for less. They wanted just 30 months. But they said that Sullivan's role at the riot had really been overstated, that, you know, he had a mental health breakdown. He had been suffering. He didn't mean to do the things that he did. Well, ever since his conviction, he's been in jail. It's taken that long. It's taken at least 4 months, at least maybe now 5 months at this point, for John Sullivan to figure out how much longer he's going to have to stay in prison. He's going to get transferred from that county jail into prison. So I'm looking forward to hearing about John Sullivan's life behind bars. Iowa Fine Girl in PA says, Zach, why was the Sullivan case tried in Utah? I think most others have been tried in D.C. Oh, that's a great question. Considering the fact that everybody else's trial was held in D.C., the only reason John Sullivan's was held in Utah is because he was a Utah resident, and that's where he went. I tend to believe that the federal government tried him in Utah potentially to not allow him to get as stiff of a sentence as he did. But that Utah jury, you know, they're the definition of F around and find out. That's exactly what he did, and that's exactly what they showed him.
See, as you can see, the more you f*** around, the more you're going to find out.
That's right, Johnny boy. That's right. You want to mess with the bull, you're going to get the horns. So, yeah, if this was an equal application of justice under the law, John Sullivan would have been tried in D.C. Now, there is an alternate theory there. Let's say that the D.C. juries and the D.C. judges knew who John Sullivan was, and they were aware of his presence as an infiltrator working for the bad guys, essentially. And so in an effort to shield him from getting a light sentence, as we've seen so many bad actors in D.C. get, his trial was moved to the state of Utah, where it was certain that he would get the swift type of justice that I think many of us were hoping he would get. So either way, it doesn't really matter to me which one of those things it is, and it could be something totally different, but that's kind of how I see it. So I am very, very, very happy about the results of this trial. So goodbye, Johnny. Goodbye, Johnny X. We'll go ahead and see you later. All right, so I completely forgot to play this yesterday. Esther had sent this to me, after the show had ended, there was an apology video that was made. So we're going to watch a little bit of both. But this was one of the stupidest things I have ever seen in my entire life. I mean, you want to talk about bad decision making. This right here on screen, this woman she's a district attorney in the state of New York, okay? She's a lawyer. She's been practicing for like 33 years, okay? It's not like she's young. It's not like she's inexperienced. And it's not like she's new, all right? And she was pulled over by a police officer in her own town. And she basically berated the police officer and then refused to allow him to ticket her. And then she drove off, resulting in a high-speed chase. And this guy had to follow her to her home. So let me see. We'll watch a quick clip from the original interaction. Here we are. So
Basically, she gets in her car. She drives away after he pulls her over. This is in Monroe County. And she's basically attempting to use her official position as the district attorney to circumvent any kind of accountability for herself. She essentially tells him, you know, I'm the district attorney. You're not allowed to pull me over. And he was like, listen, bitch, like, that's just not how it works. I'm going to go ahead and write you a ticket. She's lucky that's all she got. I mean, if this would have been any other type of person, he probably would have had her on the ground and one of her wrists would have been broken. So let's go. She was speeding at 55 miles an hour in a 35 mile per hour zone. And again, instead of stopping immediately, she allowed herself to be chased. She went to her home. And then once she got there, that's when her bad behavior began. Let's go ahead and watch her act like a total Karen.
Didn't stop at all. Did you not hear my lights or sirens or anything?
No, I didn't actually. I was on the phone.
Okay. Hang on. Let me see. Why is there no audio?
Yes, I am. With the hands-free, absolutely.
Okay, here we go.
Okay.
I'm going to have to refresh.
Sirens or anything?
No, I didn't actually. I was on the phone.
Okay. Well, you're not supposed to be on the phone while you're driving either.
Yes, I am. With the hands-free, absolutely.
Okay. Why are you so upset at me? I'm doing my job. Mm-hmm. You just admitted to me that you were going 55 and a 35.
Can
I'm Philip Throat.
Leave me alone.
She's calling the chief of police, probably.
Officer Chris Afoli. Can you stay over here, ma'am?
Talk to your boss. Look at this. This never ends well.
Okay. Just go ahead and do it. Go ahead. You know what I've been dealing with all day? 3 murders in the city. And do you think I really care if I was going 20 miles over the speed limit?
I'm just doing my job. If you pulled over when you saw my lights, which obviously you did.
I thought you were going somewhere else because I thought no one would ever pull a black SUV if you ran my plates.
I didn't run your plate. I just called your plate out. And then I'm following you because you're not stopping.
All right. All right. Bye. Bye.
Hi.
Hi. I'll talk to Jeff. Okay. Sorry. Okay. I didn't want to pull over on Philip Throat. It was just, I figured I'd just pull into my driveway. Okay. And I called Dennis and I said.
Can you believe the arrogance of this woman? She lies. She says she didn't see it. Then she says, well, I thought you were going someplace else. And then she says, I just didn't want to pull over because I'm the district attorney and I'm above the law. And you know, I'm sorry you had a bad day at work. Everyone has a bad day at work. Every single one of us has had one of those days where we just want to get home, where the last thing we want to do is interact with a police officer who's pulling us over for speeding 20 miles an hour over the limit. But here's the thing. An average person would be forced to pull over, or they would suffer the wrath of that officer. What do you think that her constituents feel about her behavior or her entitled nature? The fact that she berated this officer, okay, he was very polite to her. All right. I got to be honest. I would have roughed her up a little bit if this was me. There's no way I would have wanted this woman talking to me like that, especially after she led me on a chase. I have seen people get their asses whooped for a lot less than what this woman did. All right, so we're going to go ahead and watch her apology video now because somebody obviously told her this was a really bad look. She put it out on Twitter, and this is essentially a public flogging ritual. This is like Game of Thrones. She's walking through the streets naked, and people are throwing rotten food and human feces and saying, shame, shame, shame.
Install a security system.
Last Monday, I failed you and the standards that I hold myself to.
Yeah.
For that, I am so sorry.
Oh, yeah.
What I did was wrong. No excuses. I take full responsibility for my actions. I fell short of the values I've held for my entire 33-year career. I didn't treat this officer with the respect that he deserved. All police officers deserve respect.
All right, so I only wanted to show just a little bit. So you guys can see, she is taking accountability, and I respect that. I respect that a great deal, because there are too many of our public servants who, despite the fact that they've been caught red-handed in whatever sort of sticky scenario it is, They continue to maintain that level of arrogance, which allowed them to get into that position in the first place. Long story short, she is reporting herself for bad behavior to the bar and to the ethics board. She's also handing the case over to an outside district attorney, and she's also going to sanction herself. So she's got plenty of ramifications coming from this, and it's very likely that she's going to lose her job. At the very least, I don't think the people of Monroe County or the town where she lives are going to feel comfortable voting for her again in the future. But I just wanted to say it's a rare act of humility for her to come out and to admit right away what she did and to put herself in every possible situation that is even available for her to face accountability. So my hat's off to you, ma'am, and I hope you've learned your lesson. Simply don't behave like that in the future. Good stuff. Good stuff. All right, and speaking of corrupt politicians, my God, Adam Schiff. Adam Schiff is probably one of the most corrupt members of Congress that I can possibly imagine. And it looks like that corruption is starting to catch up with him. An ethics complaint has also been filed for the good congressman from California, the would-be new California senator. Looks like he may not be doing much of anything except spreading his cheeks as he enters into the California penal code system. He has been basically found out to be engaging in some pretty serious illegal behavior. These are behaviors that arguably are career ending for any politician. It would appear that a citizen has filed an ethics complaint against him, and they allege that he has committed election and voter fraud by claiming that he was both a citizen of California and a citizen of Maryland. Let me just say this. Adam Schiff might not recognize this because he's a Democrat after all, but you're only allowed to vote in one place. You can only be a citizen of one state at a time. By claiming citizenship in two states and collecting two ballots, one in either state, and then voting in both states, you're committing fraud in one of them. And even more than that, it gets deeper. You see, back in 2000, when Adam Schiff was elected to serve in the U.S. House of Representatives in Congress, it was in the state of California, and he's been there ever since. But the thing is, he reportedly purchased a home in Maryland with his wife back in 2003. And he stated that he was planning to occupy this home for 12 consecutive months as his primary residence, which, can you say it with me? That would make him a resident of the state of Maryland. It would also make him ineligible to serve as the congressman in the state of California. So, even worse than that, he refinanced his home in 2009. He did it again in 2010. He did it again in 2011. He did it again in 2013. And every single time he refinanced his home, he claimed that Maryland was his primary residence. Undoubtedly, there must have been some sort of tax break that he was getting as a result of being a Maryland resident. Now, in 2009, there was actually another House ethics investigation that was filed, and it was claimed that Schiff did this, and Schiff claimed it was an error, and he repaid those exempt taxes to the state of Maryland. A fellow member of Congress, however, was charged with criminal counts for doing the exact same thing. You might have heard this story. That was Stephen Watkins of Oklahoma. Now, in addition, the amount of the home mortgage has basically remained the same the entire time. Congress needs to look into that and see what's going on. Did they give him a 0% interest mortgage because he was a congressman? Now, when he was asked about that residence in Maryland a couple of months ago, we actually talked about it here on the show because he was on the campaign trail, again, running for U.S. Senate in California, and Schiff said, it's a non-issue. But he added that his primary residence was in California. However, he neglected to mention that he had repeatedly claimed that Maryland home that he lived in with his wife was his primary residence, not the state of California. And it turns out there is even more to this sad, sordid tale.
So earlier this month, Californian Chris Bisch, who is also running for U.S. Congress in California's District 6, issued a draft report along with Darren Ellis, who is also running for the California State Assembly. Now, the report we have included here, and there are a few highlights. Jim Kyle says he didn't do that. It was Trump. He's the bad guy here. Oh, yes. If only it were so simple. I think that there is a new bell tolling in Washington, D.C. when it comes to corrupt politicians. And Adam Schiff is staring down some very important charges. It all depends on if somebody, say a plucky U.S. attorney, wants to make a name for themselves. So when we take a look at this report, Maryland Code 7401, it defines mortgage fraud as such. Any action made by a person with the intent to defraud that involves, one, knowingly making any deliberate misstatement, misrepresentation, or omission during the mortgage lending process with the intent that the misstatement, misrepresentation, or omission relied on by a mortgage lender, borrower, or any other party to the mortgage lending process, or filing or causing to be filed in the land records in the county where a residential real property is located, any document relating to a mortgage loan that the person knows to contain a deliberate misstatement, misrepresentation, or omission. You know what else is very ironic about this? Is that this is kind of similar to what they're claiming President Trump did, just on a much larger level in the state of New York. They're claiming that President Trump lied about the value of his properties to get better loan terms. Well, Adam Schiff lied about his primary state of residence so that he could get better mortgage terms. Wow. And they filed how many felonies against President Trump in the state of New York? I wonder how Adam Schiff is going to justify this, and I really hope that somebody who has access to him brings up this very salient point. I mean, something that I certainly would like to know. I actually might just call Adam Schiff's congressional office and ask for a comment on this. So here's the thing. Adam Schiff, despite claiming to live and represent the people in the state of California, he filed and reaffirmed through refinancing documents many times that his primary residence at 8204 Windsor View Terrace in Potomac, Maryland, zip code 28054, was where he lived. And Adam Schiff's on-the-record acknowledgement of those mortgage document filings, stating that his primary residence was in Maryland, and during a House ethics hearing via a claim of a mistake, evidences acknowledgement of mortgage fraud. You see, mortgage fraud doesn't have to be committed intentionally. It's one of those crimes. And let's just take a look back here. Any action, the law states, made by a person with the intent to defraud, knowingly or unknowingly. Wow, look at that. Adam Schiff made a mistake, but he still committed mortgage fraud. So it's clear that as a result of the fraud he committed on several occasions on an almost yearly basis, he received better rates on his mortgage. And the mortgage was in that Maryland property. He claimed it was his primary residence as opposed to his secondary residence. Now, remember, Baltimore's top prosecutor, Marilyn Mosby, she was also recently convicted of mortgage fraud in Maryland. Adam Schiff did exactly what Marilyn Mosby did, and in the same state. So Adam Schiff very likely could end up convicted and in prison for what seems like a fairly innocuous crime. Now, the big difference between President Trump and Adam Schiff, President Trump didn't do his books, okay? He had accountants to do his books. He and the banks agreed on the value of those properties. Adam Schiff is the only one who filled out his mortgage paperwork. Adam Schiff is the only one who intentionally lied about his primary residence. What about the people of California? How do they feel about Adam Schiff lying about where he lives or who he's actually representing? What do you say we also check out Adam Schiff's primary residence in Maryland? Jim Kyle, I bet he had a homestead exam. I don't think there's homestead in Maryland. I think it's only down here in Florida. But, yeah, I think that he definitely got some better terms. And also, he got a lower rate on his mortgage. He also probably got a tax break of some kind. So, at the same time that Adam Schiff claimed his property in Maryland was that primary residence, he also was forced to have claimed to be a resident of California so that he could run for the U.S. House in California. And that means that he falsified his voter registration. So the Heritage Foundation, which I happen to love, has an excellent piece describing election integrity. And in that piece describing election integrity, they define various types of voter fraud. Now, false registrations are definitely a type of voter fraud. How do they define that? Well, that is voting under fraudulent voter registration that either uses a phony name or a real or fake address or claim residence in a particular jurisdiction where the registered voter does not actually live and is not entitled to vote. That one right there. That's exactly what Adam Schiff did. Let's see. Just an average American says homestead available in Texas. Excellent. So a number of California residents have also been convicted of voter fraud in recent years. So this is a real crime, and people get in trouble for it. We have also from the report, Adam and Eve Schiff. Can you believe that her name is Eve? Adam and Eve Schiff sold their California home at 425 Amherst Drive in Burbank, California, in May of 2003. That was just prior to their purchase of that primary residence we mentioned in Maryland at 8204 Windsor View Terrace in Potomac. Now, in 2009, right around the same time as a House ethics hearing was convened pertaining to that Maryland residence, Adam and Eve purchased a condominium at 250 North First Street in Burbank, California. So that means from 2003 to 2009, they didn't even maintain a home in the state of California. They didn't even bother to live there. He wasn't really a resident of the state of California. Adam Schiff was always a Maryland boy. He was always a company man. So, subsequently, they were forced to register to vote in California at that address. And it's pretty important to note that this condominium is only 650 square feet. It's only got one bedroom. It's only got one bathroom. And it's also of note that Adam and Eve have two minor children who are approximately middle school age at the time of this purchase. Where do they go to school? How was it that this family of four lived in this 650 square foot condominium? Now, if you look at the California Elections Code, it states that if a person moves to another state with the intention of making it his or her domicile, the voter loses his or her domicile in this state. And California Elections Code 2026 states the domicile of a member of the legislature or a representative in Congress of the United States shall be conclusively presumed to be at the residence address indicated on that person's currently filed affidavit of registration. So Adam and Eve Schiff, when they sold their home in California in 2003 and then subsequently purchased a home in Maryland as their primary residence in the same year, they remained voters in the state of California, despite being non-residents for that six-year period from 2003 to 2009. Because 2009 was the next time they bought property, that condominium, the 650-square-foot condominium in Burbank. Now, California domicile records pertaining to change in voter registration are absent and could not be located, which implies strongly that there was voter registration fraud that was committed by Adam and Eve Schiff between 2003 and 2009, a six-year period. So in order to qualify as a candidate to represent California in the U.S. House of Representatives or even in the Senate, a person has a couple of qualifications they have to meet. They have to be at least 25 years of age. They have to be a U.S. citizen. They have to be a resident in the state of California. And guess what? For the election years of 2004, 2006, and 2008, Adam Schiff was not a resident in the state of California. How do we know this? Well, it's plainly obvious by the sale in 2003
of his home at 425 Amherst Drive in Burbank, California, and the purchase of a primary residence at 8204 Windsor View Terrace in Potomac, Maryland. If we take a look at California Elections Code 349A, residence for voting purposes means a person's domicile. That domicile of a person is that place in which his or her habitation is fixed, wherein the person has the intention of remaining, and to which, whenever he or she is absent, the person has the intention of returning. So at any given time, a person may have only one domicile. Considering the fact that Adam Schiff had no place to live, no place to return to, no place he intended on going other than his residence in the state of Maryland, Adam Schiff was ineligible to serve in the United States Congress. He was ineligible to even run for United States Congress. Now, Adam Schiff knowingly and willfully registered as a candidate, even though he knew that he was a resident of Maryland, and he knew that this could constitute a violation which was subject to the California Election Code. Any person who files or submits for filing a nomination paper or declaration of candidacy, knowing that in or in part has been falsely created, is punishable by a fine not exceeding $1,000 or imprisonment. Now, even worse than that, Adam and Eve Schiff remained registered voters in the state of California, despite not owning a domicile in the state of California, despite being residents of Maryland from 2003 on, and the California Elections Code states that not being entitled to vote at an election, fraudulently votes or fraudulently attempts to vote at that election, is a crime which is subject to imprisonment pursuant to Subdivision H of Section 1170 of the Penal Code for 16 months or 2 or 3 years or in a county jail not exceeding 1 year. So Adam Schiff has done a lot of illegal things while serving in the U.S. House of Representatives, all the while LARPing to the American people that Donald Trump had some overwhelming evidence against him and that he, Adam Schiff, had it, but he couldn't tell us because national security. So it also turns out that Adam Schiff was ineligible to vote as a result of not living in California. Now, what is the definition of ineligible voting? Well, illegal registration and voting by individuals who are not U.S. citizens, are convicted felons, or who are otherwise not eligible to vote. The last one perfectly encompasses Adam and Eve Schiff. They were not eligible to vote. They had no right to vote in the state of California. And again, he had no right to serve in the U.S. House of Representatives. So it's understood, according to the report, that Adam and Eve Schiff, because they were residents of Maryland and have been voting absentee in California, have been breaking California Election Code 18578, which states that any person who applies for or who votes or attempts to vote a vote by mail ballot by fraudulently signing the name of a fictitious person or of a regularly qualified voter or a person who is not qualified to vote is guilty of a felony. That felony is punishable by imprisonment pursuant to Subdivision H of Section 1170 of the Penal Code of California for 16 months or 2 to 3 years and a fine not exceeding $1,000 or by both that fine and that imprisonment. So Adam Schiff, having committed all of these crimes in this report, having been so diligently put together and researched in its entirety, all of the codes are already there, all of the crimes are already enumerated. The Ethics Committee is not even going to have to do any work. I wonder who actually is the chair of the Ethics Committee. Ethics Committee Chair, U.S. House. Let's take a look. Okay. Oh, I spelled it wrong. Is that what's screwing it up? Or is my internet not working? Serter says, are we sure it didn't start out as Adam and Steve with Schiff and his wife with what we know about that butthole? Well, you know, anything can happen, but I have no knowledge of anything specifically to that. Klee84JJ says, never catch you live since Time Changing UK.
Hey, fam, love you still. Love to America. Love from Wales. Thank you, Zach, Lisa, Mum, and Lisa and Mum. Thank you very much, KLEE84JJ. It's so good to see you. Really appreciate it. What is going on with my internet? Why can't I get anything to work? Well, I guess let me look it up on my phone because apparently it doesn't want to pull anything up. Who is the chair of the Ethics Committee in the U.S. House of Representatives? Ah, Republican chairmen. I knew this already, but Republican Chairman Michael Guest of Mississippi, David P. Joyce of Ohio, John H. Rutherford of Florida, Andrew R. Garbarino of New York, and Michelle Fischbach of Minnesota. Now, the ranking member for the Democrats is Susan Wild of Pennsylvania. You've also got Veronica Escobar from Texas, Mark DeSalnier from California, Deborah K. Ross of North Carolina, and Glenn F. Ivey of Maryland. So, is it a possibility that Adam Schiff just gets a fine he's not going to have to worry about anything? Absolutely. Of course it's a possibility. But considering what's happening in the country right now, the hypocrisy would be overwhelming, and I think that there would be quite the outcry. In fact, I'm encouraging you, if you yourself live in any of the districts where these congressmen represent you, let me just say them again. Michael Guest, he's the chairman in Mississippi. He's the one that you want to make sure you call. But you also want to talk to all of the other Republicans on the committee and make sure that they're aware that this sort of thing cannot stand, especially in light of what Adam Schiff has been saying, lying about Donald Trump for years, and even more so, the witch hunt that's currently being run against Donald Trump. And you might want to remind them of Marilyn Mosby and the fact that she was herself recently imprisoned. Now, I don't know what county Marilyn was convicted in, but wouldn't that just be just desserts if Adam Schiff committed the same crimes in that same county? We'd still have to get a California district attorney who would be willing to press charges as well. And I don't know who is the district attorney for the Burbank area. But this is something that has put Adam Schiff in a significant position of risk. So before you black pill and say that nothing's going to happen to him, do me a favor. Call the congressmen who are sitting on the Ethics Committee currently in the U.S. House of Representatives, because you've got nothing to lose. And Adam Schiff has everything to lose. Everything to lose. Imagine if he has to drop out of this race because he clearly doesn't live in the state of California. Thank you so much to Lou Ann V, who says, hi, Zach. I'm dropping some gold pills on the run. Peace. Good to see you, Luann. Hope you catch the show later. Thank you to Loop to Loop for the can, Raising Cane as well, Porpoiseful for the cookie. Liberty Bell says it never gets old that they accuse Trump of everything they've done. Thanks, Zach. Much love to you and yours. Absolutely. This is just another example of pure cases of projection. Democrats committing crimes and then trying to place those crimes at the feet of Donald John Trump. Sean Joe, thank you for the cookie. Porpoiseful, thank you for the cookie. And Sean Joe, thank you again for the cookie. I appreciate that. Thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, guys. So remember I mentioned, oh, you know what? And I might as well bring this up while we're on the subject of people, skipping out on justice. We haven't had a chance to talk about the Harvey Weinstein situation. So, let me explain it to you in the way that I understand. So Harvey Weinstein was convicted in both California and New York for a series of rapes. In the state of New York, it was three women, and two of them, Harvey Weinstein maintained sexual relations with, in a consensual way for years after that. Now, the reason Harvey Weinstein was convicted, now here's the thing. There was actually no evidence of any legal wrongdoing by Harvey Weinstein with those three women. It was just them saying, you know, he took advantage of me. And the reason Harvey Weinstein's conviction was overturned was the manner in which the prosecution proceeded to convict him. They entered into evidence, testimony and evidence that had nothing to do with the cases in New York. And Harvey Weinstein was largely convicted based upon the testimony of those witnesses. So it essentially made him look, well, you know, he's an unrepentant rapist and he's a pervert and he needs to go to prison. But the truth is it was a 14th Amendment violation. Harvey Weinstein was prejudiced in the eyes of the jury and, well, the judge allowed for Harvey Weinstein to be prejudiced in the eyes of the jury. The prosecution's tactic is actually illegal in the state of New York. You may believe that Harvey Weinstein is a rapist. I mean, I believe he's a rapist. You may believe that he deserves to be in prison. I certainly believe that he deserves to be in prison. But I also believe that he's a citizen of the United States of America, and he is subject to the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. And as much as it pains me to see Harvey Weinstein's conviction overturned, I would rather see it done correctly and know that those sort of dirty lawfare tactics are not able to be used against anyone, regardless of the crimes they've committed or regardless of their political or ideological stance on any one particular issue. You see, by allowing Harvey Weinstein to be convicted in that manner, it opened up the possibility for those sorts of dirty tactics to be used against anybody else for any reason. And now that his conviction has been overturned, it remains to be seen whether or not they're going to try to convict him again. Now, he's still in prison in California. That trial was solid. They had plenty of evidence, and they were able to convict him. It's only a 16-year sentence, if I'm not mistaken. So he may get out, but he's kind of old and infirmed. So I know that people are pissed. Thank you, number one Indiana dad. Appreciate you, brother. I know people are pissed. You know, I mean, when they saw that his conviction got overturned, they were like, I knew it. I knew it was going to happen. You know, I mean, at the time of the trial, I remember thinking like, this doesn't quite feel right. Although, you know, it felt right because I knew he was guilty. But we can't just assume that people are guilty and convict them based upon that. There has to be a fair trial, and it has to be evidence that's presented. So hopefully they're going to go back and retry him. But they may have just stained the New York justice system so badly that they may not be able to. So doesn't mean that Harvey Weinstein's not going to be convicted of additional rapes in the future in other states. That remains to be seen. But again, the problem being that the women who testified against him in the New York trial, those crimes had been committed in the state of California, and it was illegal for the judge to allow that evidence to be entered and for the jury to hear it. So if you're going to be mad at anybody, you be mad at that judge, because that judge should have known better. And everybody was caught up in the wrath of the Me Too movement and allowed themselves to really to trample the Constitution. So that's really it. Kids go, but they can charge Trump for non-crimes, not evidence, no sane accuser. No, absolutely. What they're doing to Trump in the state of New York is completely unfair. And make no mistake, if he is convicted, all of his charges are going to be overturned on appeal, and he's going to take it to the highest level that he possibly can. You know, to me, this shows that our broken justice system can be used against anybody. And the way they did it in New York against Harvey Weinstein, I think it opened the door to what they've been doing against Donald Trump. The court is broken. The judges are completely corrupt. The prosecutors, the DAs, you know, they don't care about the law. They care about the narrative. They care about the theatricality. It's disgusting. Completely disgusting. But don't you worry. Donald Trump knows exactly what he's doing, and he will be vindicated. We're going to talk plenty about the Trump trials here in just a moment. But let's catch up with Hunter Biden. I mentioned yesterday that Hunter has announced he's going to be suing for defamation and revenge porn Fox News and a bunch of their contributors. So I speculated yesterday maybe they were just going to allow it after what they did with the Dominion lawsuit. But Fox is actually standing firm on this one. They're saying, not a bit. This is constitutionally protected coverage, and this wasn't hacked. You got high, you smoked crack, and you left your laptop at a repair shop. So nice try, Hunter. Let's go ahead and see. You want to F around? You want to find out? Go ahead and bring it, boy. So Hunter's legal team wrote that they are anticipating this imminent litigation against Fox News, and alleging conspiracy and actions to defame. But we know that it was just reporting. I mean, that's all it was. I mean, Hunter Biden's laptop's real. It wasn't hacked. It was, you know, his fault that it was out there. And he put himself in that position. So they've essentially said, hey, consistent with the First Amendment, Fox News has accurately covered these highly publicized events, as well as the subsequent indictment of an FBI informant who said the source was, you know, had made certain claims about Biden. So we're going to go ahead and report on it, and you can do your worst to us, Hunter Biden. Teresa, you noticed. Yes, I'm wearing a Taco Tuesday shirt, but we don't have tacos. I do want to go to the store after this and get some tacos. All right, so take a look at this. Master Debater earlier mentioning that we the people are the problem. I mean, I don't disagree, but, I mean, you can't put that on all of the people because some people are out there doing good work. As an example, take a look at these residents in a Louisiana Democrat-run city. It's the capital city of Louisiana. They've recently won the right to secede from that Democrat-run hellhole in the state capital, and they get to create their own city. How brilliant is this? Is this not something that we should be doing in every single left-wing state around the country where the Democrats have captured the major metropolitan centers? Let's just break off a big chunk for ourselves. Let's go ahead and start a new city, a new municipality. So the New York Times is actually the one reporting that the Louisiana Supreme Court has cleared the way for a group of mostly white, affluent residents of Baton Rouge to secede from the new city of St. George and form the new city of St. George. This is the first incorporated city in the state of Louisiana for almost two decades. Now, it was a nearly split ruling, but it was 4-3, and that was enough to win. The justices found that the lower courts were wrong when they blocked St. George's creations over concerns about its financial viability. Andrew Murrell is one of the leaders of the St. George movement, and he put out a statement in the wake of this decision by the Louisiana Supreme Court. He said, this is the culmination of citizens exercising their constitutional rights. We voted and we won. Whether you are for or you are against St. George, now is your opportunity, a historic opportunity to create a city from the beginning, from the ground up. It's your ideas, it's your policies, it's your way of life, and now you can come together and put those out there and have someone accountable to you. Now we begin the process of delivering on our promises of a better city. We welcome both our friends and foes to the table to create St. George. I think this is so cool. Now, it wasn't quite my Mark Twain voice. It wasn't quite my Foghorn Leghorn. I was just, you know, trying to do a general Southern accent. So, if you go back to 2015, at that time, there was another attempt to create the city of St. George. And the people who were working to have it happen at that time failed to collect enough signatures to bring this proposal up for a vote. But in 2019, they prevailed. There was a lengthy court battle. It kind of stalled it for a little while. And now the mayor and president who leads the combined Baton Rouge and East Baton Rouge parish governments, she's a woman by the name of Sharon Weston Broom. She's the one who sued the St. George organizers. She essentially whined about the idea of secession, that it was going to suck more than $48 million in yearly tax revenue from the local government. Well, it will, and that's your fault, because people don't want to be governed by ineffectual bureaucrats who don't listen to the people they represent. So St. George is now going to be the Louisiana's sixth largest city in terms of population. They've got nearly 100,000 people there. And it's likely, guess what, going to be a GOP stronghold as well, because it has a heavily affluent and a white population. In 2020, white Louisianans supported President Trump by a 77-22% margin, while blacks at that time supported Joe Biden by 88-10%. Those numbers are going to be even better this time around come November. Now, the current mayor committed to serving the residents of St. George following the vote by the Supreme Court. A lot of other people are real pissed off. The local NAACP released a statement slamming the new town and warning that the development would negatively impact Baton Rouge's education system and community representation.
He said the St. George plan poses significant risks to our education system. It threatens the continuity of critical programs and challenges community representation. The creation of a new municipality introduces considerable uncertainty around funding allocations of our schools, jeopardizing the cornerstone of our community's future, education. Well, here's the thing. When you don't run a city correctly, and you spend all the money you have on useless things that you don't need, when you pay your bureaucrats far too much money to do little to nothing at all for the citizens, and they decide they no longer want to be a part of your failed and corrupt establishment, that's on you, my friend. That's on you. It sounds like Baton Rouge is going to have to do a little bit of reevaluation about the way that it handles its money and the way that it interacts with its citizens. I hope that this is going to be a good thing. Not only, I'm sure it'll be a good thing for the people of St. George, but I hope it's going to be a great thing for the people of Baton Rouge as well. What have we got here? No, what we have here is a failure to communicate. Oh, speaking of failures to communicate, things are just falling apart all around the country for the deep state. That's kind of the theme of today's show. Honey, would you please come in here and close the blinds? It's getting real hot. I forgot to close the blinds and the sun is just pumping in here. Yeah, that's right. The failure of the deep state, the smell of fear, panic in D.C., that's the theme of today's show. So Nancy Pelosi appeared on an MSNBC program. MSNBC is obviously very, very favorable to Joe Biden and the Democrats. However, this particular appearance by Nancy was not as favorable as you might hope. And she actually lost her shit, totally lost her temper in this interview. She showed up yesterday, and the host of the show she was appearing on, Katie Turr, brought up how the plandemic itself impacted the economy under former President Trump. Now, before the plandemic in 2020, the economy under President Trump had experienced a jump in median household incomes. It was also an all-time low for poverty rates here in America. Unemployment rates were at a 50-year low. And Katie Turr asserted that job losses under President Trump, I'm sorry, Pelosi asserted to Katie Turr, that job losses under Trump were actually the worst out of all the presidents. But Katie actually corrected her and noted that, well, you know, there was a global pandemic at the time of his presidency. Let's go ahead and watch Nancy Pelosi as she accuses Katie Turr of essentially being a shill for Donald Trump for just telling the truth. Got to wait for the commercial. Oh, wow, look at that wine. Okay, here we go.
Joe Biden is doing that, created 9 million jobs in his term in office. Donald Trump has the worst record of job loss of any president. So we just have to make sure people know.
That was a global pandemic.
He had the worst record of any president. We've had other concerns in our country. If you want to be an apologist for Donald Trump, that may be your role, but it ain't mine. And
I don't
he has the worst.
That anybody can accuse and of that. We.
Well, I don't think anybody can accuse me of that. Katie Turr is not like a fan of Trump, but I love it that she told Nancy Pelosi the truth. And Nancy looked like her eyes were going to pop out of her head. It was before noon. She obviously hadn't had her lunchtime martini yet, so she was a little more on edge than she normally would be. Now, yesterday we talked about that that poll that CNN did, which showed that a majority of the nation views President Trump's time in office as a success, a net win. And also a majority believe that Joe Biden is a spectacular failure. Jim Acosta was forced to confront the results of this poll on the air, and he was quite literally astonished when he heard that a majority of this nation loves the job that Donald Trump did. 55% of Americans believe that Trump's presidency was a success. And the same percentage of voters said that in January 2021, it was actually a failure. Let's go ahead and watch Jim Acosta enter a dark night of the soul as he confronts the fact that Donald Trump is much better than he is able to admit. We got to wait for the commercial again. Are we?
I'm kind of shocked.
If you have sciatic nerve.
Oh, my God. I feel like we're just supposed to look at this girl's butt in this commercial.
South Dakota governor and potential Trump running mate Kristi Noem is defending her decision to kill her.
Oh, no, it's not a clip. It's 6 minutes. All right. Well, suffice to say, Jim Acosta enters a dark night of the soul when he's confronted with the fact that Joe Biden is a failure and Donald Trump is a success. Now, on the note of Joe Biden being a failure, how many times can you guys count? Because I can't. How many times we have watched a gaffe that Joe Biden has committed? I mean, it's essentially every single time he speaks in public. He was like, you know, we're going to save America. Pause or clap now, you idiots, or whatever it might be. Or talking about his uncle getting eaten by cannibals, or how he used to drive 18-wheelers, or he grew up a poor black boy in Mississippi, whatever the lie of the week is. What's funny is that the White House has officially put out a list of, at least in 2024, how many times Joe Biden has made mistakes in his public remarks. And what, it's not even May yet. We're just through the end of April. And Joe Biden has already made 148 mistakes during public remarks in the year of 2024. And he hasn't even been out and about all that much. I mean, yeah, we've had plenty of clips of him. But when he speaks, it's brief. You know, he's not out there giving speeches. I mean, yes, he did the State of the Union, but I mean, by and large, Joe Biden is still being held in the basement, underneath the vault of the White House. So for the White House itself and their communication staff to put out a list saying that they've had to correct Joe Biden's public remarks at least 148 times, that's stunning. It is a stunning omission and a stunning admission, and I'm afraid they didn't omit it. So they release an official transcript anytime Joe Biden gives a speech or anytime he takes any questions. And when they go through that transcript, they frequently are forced to correct. Maybe they got to add, maybe they got to alter Biden's official remarks so that way they can bring them into compliance with the official White House policy. Or in some cases, they also have to bring it into compliance with reality. And in other cases, still, official statements have had to be changed because they need it to convey the exact opposite of what Joe Biden actually said when he was speaking live. So, in 118 statements, speeches, or chats that Biden has had with reporters between January 1st until April of this year, they've had to officially update their transcripts with corrections to what Biden has said out loud 148 times. It might have even been more than 148 times. I mean, certainly since this was written, it's happened more than 148 times. Sometimes they have to include corrections, like to people's names, maybe dates that he's mentioned, maybe titles of organizations. Other times they have to change verbs, or they have to change it to make it modify the meaning of the president's statement entirely. Sometimes they take words that the president didn't say but should have, and they insert them into his official statements. Serter says, Q said we are watching a movie, right? Joe Biden is the comic relief for this movie. Yes, I think that's an excellent way to look at it. So it was then, though, no, through my American Rescue Plan, which every American, or meant to be Republican, voted against, I might add, we made the strongest, largest investment in public safety ever. So you can't even read that. It's got a number of corrections in it. And you can see here, this is Joe Biden in the White House press room. And this is the 65-inch television that they've got his speech on. They underline it. They even add pauses for dramatic effect. And Joe Biden still can't get it right. So he said, I've always believed we've got it all wrong. He was supposed to say they've got it all wrong. America is rising, and we have the best economy in the world, which we do. Okay, obviously that is completely disconnected from reality as well. We must be honest. The threat to democracy must be defended. But he meant to say defeated. And then in another case, the White House put out a transcript that falsely portrayed what Biden had said out loud in his entirety. At an event last week, that was the one where he read the word pause off the teleprompter. Now, the original White House transcript of those remarks did not include the word pause. It said inaudible. But an updated version of the transcript now includes the president's pause as well as the inaudible. Folks, imagine what we could do next. 4 more years. Pause. Oh, it is a sad day in America when you wake up and this is what you see. This is what you see. But, you know, I gotta say, I don't think that we would have been able to get here without this happening. So, you guys, we gotta take a break for the second half of the show. Sit back, we'll be right back in a moment. Warnings of a recession are growing louder as we near sell in May and go away. All signs appear to point to a sizable downturn for the Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ. Now, meanwhile, gold prices have been hitting all-time highs, and the rally is far from over. Now, y'all know silver is always late to the party, but once it finds momentum, it can easily outperform gold. So protect your retirement with gold or place a bullish bet on silver. Call the Proud Americans of the Patriot Gold Group today before it's too late. Just mention Red Pill 78 and this show, Red Pill News, and you're always going to get best-in-class service from Patriots Protecting Patriots. Patriot Gold Group has the No Fee for Life IRA, where your IRA or 401k can be in physical gold and silver, and you just might be eligible for that No Fee for Life IRA on qualifying rollovers. So give them a call today at 888-857-6092 and get your free investor guide today. Patriot Gold Group is a Consumer Affairs top-rated gold IRA dealer for 7 years in a row. Call them today at 888-857-6092. And when you support my sponsors, you support this channel. All right, guys, welcome back. So on the subject of the deep state's plans falling apart, of America rejecting the radical left-wing agenda and the Biden regime White House, as a result of the total mismanagement, of the reckless endangerment of America through the mismanagement of the southern border, a majority of Americans overwhelmingly support using the military to conduct mass deportations of illegal immigrants. I suggested this a couple of weeks ago, and I'm glad that it's caught on. So there is now poll after poll suggesting that Americans are increasingly adopting a hardline position on border enforcement. Hold on. Got to move my desk down just a little bit. I had to stand up. It was too hot. Now, a majority of Americans are supporting positions that were historically aligned with Donald Trump. That's right. We're ahead of the curve, and now the rest of the nation is catching up with us. You have to love it. We've had a couple of surveys done in recent months that indicate American voters are increasingly receptive to the idea of mass deportations, creating a border wall between the U.S. and Mexico, even detention camps of illegal aliens who are awaiting removal, and yes, my friends, the use of the U.S. military and our troops to help with those deportation efforts. That's the only way this is going to work. I've heard people say, oh, there's not going to be any mass deportations. Okay, well, that's how you feel. We'll have to wait and see exactly what's going to happen, because it's the only way we're going to bring our country back into balance. We're going to have to deport these millions of illegal aliens that have set up residence in tent cities all around the country, in hotels, and even in your bedroom if you're a liberal and you live in Boston. We've recently had a new CNN survey that found that 48% of Americans favor the idea of detaining and deporting millions of illegal aliens. A Reuters Ipsos poll asked Americans if illegal aliens should be arrested and put into detention camps while awaiting deportation. Well, 42% of those respondents answered in the affirmative. And for the first time in the poll's history, a Monmouth University survey in February found that a majority of Americans now support building a border wall. Build the wall. You should have done it before. Stop sending money to Israel, Ukraine, the Red Sea, and the Gulf of Aden. Let's go ahead and just build a wall and be done with it. You know, they're in the midst of building a port right now on the West Bank, and they could be building a wall between Mexico and the United States and keeping the people of this country safe. So, in one of the most notable surveys yet, An economist YouGov poll found that 56% of Americans favor the use of military troops to arrest and deport people who are inside the U.S. unlawfully. Now, that's as opposed to only 31% who were against the idea. 60% of those same respondents also agreed it was a good idea to use military troops to assist in Border Patrol security and secure the southern border with Mexico. Now, what else do you notice about the numbers on these polls, guys? As we get further along throughout this year, as we get closer to the election, as things get worse for America because more and more illegals continue to stream in and money keeps getting spent on them rather than on our veterans or our homeless or the people who actually need it who were born in this country, more and more Americans begin to agree with us. More and more Americans begin to agree with Donald Trump. More and more Americans look back at Trump's term in office and they say, geez, oh, Pete, we were stupid. How could we think that building a wall was a bad idea? It was the only thing that would have kept us safe. This shift in public perception comes as our country continues to deal with the ongoing and increasing impact of that immigration crisis, which is due to one thing and one thing only, and that, my friends, is the theft of the 2020 election and Joseph Robinette Biden waltzing into the United States Office of the Presidency, setting up shop at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue and preparing to fall down a series of increasingly taller stairs. Under President Joseph Robinette Biden, federal immigration authorities have witnessed record levels of encounters at the southern border and even more that they never even talk to. It's put a massive strain on our national and local resources. Joe Biden has flown illegals illegally into many different airports all around the country and primarily here in my home state of Florida and into the beautiful state of Texas in an effort to try to destabilize those very, very red areas. Instead of destroying the country outright, all it's done is galvanize the American people around what they know to work. And the policies of Donald Trump, my friends, are what actually work. And the American people are now demanding that they actually be done. This is very, very good news. And certainly it's good for the future of this country. Now, immigration experts have suggested that this crisis is spelling trouble for the current administration. I could have told you that one years ago. When Joe Biden opened up the border, I said, this is going to sink him. This right here is going to be the thing that is his undoing. In November, the American people are going to have a clear choice in front of them. You can either catch and release or you can detain and deport. And with these recent polls over and over again showing that we are being suffered by the ineptitude of the Washington, D.C. establishment, that we are being subjected to preventable crimes that never needed to take place in the first place, it is so clear who is going to be the candidate of choice. Again, you can either catch and release with Joe Biden or you can detain and deport with Donald John Trump. We need law and order to be restored here in the United States. The momentum behind this issue and the public anger at the fact that we've been invaded by illegals from all around the world is growing stronger every single day. It's not slowing down because it's not getting any better. I've said this over and over and over again. Things are going to get worse. But only by getting worse can they get better. We need an overwhelming majority of American citizens to come together and say, yes, we want one thing most of all. We want safety and security on our own borders. We want safety and assuredness in our own lands. We want to make sure that our country is not going to be allowed to be invaded by a force of military age men coming from all over the world, ready to do their worst. And believe me, my friends, they are already here and they are doing their worst every single day. People are getting their skulls cracked open. Kids are getting killed. They're getting raped. We're having mass robberies. We're having organized criminal actions. We're having drugs flood the streets of the United States of America. And we knew this was going to happen. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to recognize that this is what you get when you open your borders and you stop enforcing the laws. But unfortunately, there was a lot of really slow people out there who didn't get it. Well, now they get it, and I just hope that their daughters don't get raped and their kids don't get killed before it's too late, because we've got many, many months left before November. And then even after November, we've got until January when Donald Trump is going to be sworn in. And just think about all the damage that Joe Biden could do in the meantime. How pissed off do you think Barack Hussein Obama is going to be if he gets his ass handed to him at the ballot box and Donald Trump comes back in, swoops in January of next year, ready to take over the country and send all of those amigos packing? We're going to round them up with the U.S. military. They're going to put them in detention camps, and then they're going to send them on cargo planes back to their country of origin. And then we're going to build a big, beautiful border wall, much, much bigger, much more beautiful than what Donald Trump even had in mind before. We can certainly afford it. Just talk to Mitch McConnell. $60 billion isn't that much.
$60 billion isn't even that much. We're only talking about $2 per American citizen, or whatever it was he said it was.
It's a lot of money anyway you slice it. And we could save a lot of money by stopping funding foreign wars and putting that money into keeping the United States of America safe. It is a simple, simple policy. Very, very simple. Very, very easy to accomplish. And you have to be a brain-dead dementia patient to not be able to see that. Silly me. That's what we've got in the White House in Washington, D.C. So with an outright majority of Americans now saying that they support the deportation of illegal aliens, guess what? That majority includes 42% of Democrats. Did any of you here think at any time that we were going to be approaching 50% of the Democrat base saying that they also wanted to deport illegals in the same way that we did? That number is growing. That number is rising. Again, by the time we get to November, it's going to be much, much higher. I believe we're going to be well over 50%. This is going to be a staggering majority of American citizens. That was from a poll by Axios. That's a different poll altogether. Right now, about two-thirds of every single person responding believe that illegal immigration is a legitimate crisis. It's not a politically driven narrative. The Democrats continue to parrot over and over and over again. They understand that it is avoidable. They understand that it's been done intentionally. And President Trump, when he was elected back in 2016, he promised us he would build that border wall. The only reason it didn't get built was because of the obstruction in Congress, the obstruction in the public admin sector, the unelected fourth branch of government. Donald Trump was ready to build the wall. He got the money for it, and it was the resistance that stopped it from going up. This is a national emergency. Donald Trump called it as such. It has remained, it has even grown, and it's going to get worse by the time we get to November, which is going to result in more people coming to the fold and recognizing that they have one choice in November, and that, my friends, is to vote Donald J. Trump. Jim Kyle says we need to vote in mass for our favorite president, or they'll try to steal it again. Jim, they're still going to try to steal it again. I guarantee it. They're going to try to steal it again, and they may be successful in some areas, but we need to vote in overwhelming numbers, and we also need to work in the elections. If you're a lawyer and you haven't contacted the RNC to let them know that you're willing to volunteer your time, then, man, please, you need to do so. There is a lot that is probably going to be done to try to steal this election, but I believe that we're going to show up in so overwhelming a force of voters that it's going to be impossible for them to do it. And as I keep saying, RFK Jr., RFK takes votes from Biden. He doesn't take votes from Trump. So the presence of RFK, I think, locks the election for us. So let's talk about some of these unnecessary crimes. Customs and Border Patrol agents just arrested a Mexican man at the Peace Bridge border crossing. And when they did, they found child pornography among his belongings. He is a Mexican national, and he was attempting to enter into the United States. He was operating a commercial vehicle. He was refused entry to Canada after he made a wrong turn. And upon arriving at the CBP primary inspection area, he was escorted to a secondary area for further inspection. Now, it was during that inspection that officers verified the identity of who he was, what his driver's license said. And it was then that they discovered that there was additional information that he was probably conducting illegal activity. Let me just say this. He didn't even mean to go to Canada. It's because he screwed up that he ended up being found out. So, you know, praise God that this guy messed up and was taken in by CBP and found to be in possession of child pornographic material. It's unsure what the exact medium was or how the agents actually discovered it. I don't know if it was, you know, on paper, if it was a magazine, if it was a hard drive, if it was on his phone. We don't know. But it's a good thing, because if it wasn't for the fact that he had screwed up and crossed into Canada illegally and unsuccessfully, then CBP never would have come across him, then never would have found out that he was a Mexican national in possession of child pornography, victimizing what is likely American children. Now, it gets worse for the Democrats. Well, it gets worse for the Biden regime, because now Democrats in Congress are taking the same tack as us and the majority of the country. Could just be that they finally see the writing on the wall. Could be that they're getting calls from their constituents. I don't really care how or why it happens, but if it helps us get a wall built on the southern border, if it helps us shut down the completely lawless situation that we have down there, I am 100% in favor of it. Now, the woman you see on screen is a Democrat from Washington. Her name is Representative Marie Glusenkamp Perez. It's a mouthful. But yesterday she was speaking on a news channel. I believe it might have been Fox News, but she said that the federal government has essentially lost operational control of the southern border. And she called for Trump era enforcement policies to be brought back. I just got to say, it's a sweet sound when I hear Democrats pining for the days of Donald Trump, pining for the policies of the Golden Dawn. So she's considered to be a centrist House Democrat, and she reiterated her calls for Joe Biden to bring back the Remain in Mexico policy and also Title 42, both of which were two policies that were utilized widely during Trump's administration, but they were phased out once Joe Biden took up residence at 1600. And since that time, also, illegal immigration has surged at our southern border. Millions of migrant encounters have been had. Millions more have made it through without even having a conversation with anybody who works for the federal government. She said, I think it's been one of the fundamental mistakes around immigration to debate whether or not an immigration policy is, you know, motivated by racial animus. By the way, I think a lot of them are, but a lot of people in rural and working class communities like mine, we come from communities that have been hollowed out by fentanyl. We are demanding operational control of the southern border. I mean, immigration itself is not the problem. The problem is that the U.S. does not have operational control of the southern border. Oh, you mean like this? When Operation Lone Star soldiers were charged by a group of rowdy illegal aliens coming to rush the border, there was essentially an insurrection at the southern border. If it wasn't for Joe Biden and his dismantling of those Trump-era policies, then something like this never would have happened. It wouldn't have been necessary to even start Operation Lone Star. She's not the only one. Dean Phillips, who ran for president against Joe Biden, he was on Newsmax on Monday. And he also said, making commentary about the radical left, because we've got a couple of stories about them coming up next, that Ivy League schools have, they haven't acted quickly enough to quell the protests, and that essentially they have fostered the attitude which has allowed these entitled brats at these Ivy League institutions to demonstrate on campus, commit acts of overt violence. And then at the same time, while they're doing that, they've canceled people like me. You know, they won't let conservative speakers come to campus and speak to the students. They won't even let Jews go to class. It is insane what's happening out there right now. So Dean Phillips going on and doing these interviews and calling out the agenda of the radical left, it's hilarious to me, and I'm glad. I mean, like I said, I will take it where I can get it. If this results in changes in policy that are meaningful and impact the lives of Americans in a positive way, I am all for it. The only problem is that Congress totally can't even tie their own shoes, let alone figure out how to solve the problems of violence on campuses all around the country. Now, The death of Lake and Riley, you know, this tragic death that occurred, undoubtedly as a result of Joe Biden's lack of operational control at the southern border, and Alejandro Mayorkas's failure to run the Department of Homeland Security. It's also affected the pro-sanctuary city Democrat mayor where Lake and Riley was murdered. His name is Kelly Gertz. He's the mayor of Athens, Georgia. And now, because of his comments in the wake of Lake and Riley's death, in the wake of her murder, I shall say, the citizens of Athens, Georgia have decided they've had enough. They're going to be recalling him, and they're hoping to get rid of him. And then they're hoping to dismantle the sanctuary city policy that he had helped to implement. So a reporter from the Athens Banner-Herald is detailing Kelly Gertz's efforts to slow down a recall effort against him by local conservative activists. And if it wasn't for the death of Lake and Riley, this recall effort probably wouldn't have happened. But, you know, unfortunately, her death has galvanized a lot of people around this very important issue. Kelly Gertz is asking the county's superior court to order the suspension of a recall effort against him until the court reviews the proceedings thus far and the initiative itself. So he filed this petition last Wednesday asking the court's review include an examination of the sufficiency or lack thereof of the grounds that have been stated for the recall effort. And he asked the court to review the facts, if any, upon which the grounds in the application or the recall are based. He's essentially trying to stop the citizens of Athens, Georgia, from removing him from his position as mayor. Obviously, they are offended by his comments. I think he called this guy a newcomer or didn't want to call him an illegal, but he is an illegal. He showed little sympathy to the family of Lake and Riley. And obviously, he's wanted to keep the sanctuary city policy in tact and not work with immigration and customs enforcement. He's also contending that county officials have mishandled this recall effort. They've violated provisions of the State Recall Act. He's represented not by someone from the city, but by private counsel, and there have been no county funds that have been expended in connection with his effort to stop the recall. But we did get some private emails from Kelly Gertz just last month, and it showed that in the weeks following the murder of Riley, the Democrat mayor was defending sanctuary city policies, which, of course, allow for illegal aliens to not be turned over to ICE, and that includes even when they're charged with violent crimes, like the murder of a beautiful young woman who would have grown up to be a nurse and probably had a very fulfilling and satisfying life. He said, "I support the detainer policy as one that is both humane and following the well-documented proper propensity of immigrants in the U.S. to be less criminally inclined than the native-born population." Can you believe that? I cannot even fathom how they use that argument against us, suggesting that illegal immigrants who are, by very nature of their presence, breaking laws to be here, are less propensed to commit crimes than the native population. He's talking about Americans. He's saying, oh, illegals are actually better citizens than the people who are born here. You know, certainly they're not as uppity as those native-born Americans. That's essentially what he's saying. So he has really drawn the ire of the people of Athens, and I sincerely hope that that recall effort is effective and he's booted out of there before too long. So, in thinking about those violent left-wing agitators that are taking over college campuses all around the country, preparing for the Summer of Love 2.0, those are the young Americans who are part of the non-committed movement, those who voted in the Democratic primaries but refused to vote for any candidates in a show of protest against Joe Biden because of, I guess, his handling of the situation between Israel and Hamas and, of course, the plight of the Palestinian people. James Carville is a Democrat strategist who pays attention to those things, and he is very, very unhappy with the woke voting bloc, those same young Americans who are also rioting on college campuses around the nation right now. He lashed out at young Americans who are refusing to vote for Joe Biden because it's James Carville's position that this is going to be what loses Joe Biden the election. I would contend that this is just one of many things which are going to force and cause Joe Biden to lose the election. Let's take a listen to James Carville.
Are you kidding me? Is this the United States of America? Is this the nation that was founded on the principle that no person is above the law? And then you tell these young people, if you don't get involved right now in this election, they're going to be involved in your life for the rest of your frickin' life. And if Trump and Roberts and Alito and Gorsuch and Thomas and Leonard Leo and the Heritage Foundation, if they get a hold, there will be no government left. There will be no rights left. You'll live under theocracy. So you'll
end up Christian, he says. Oh, like that's such a bad thing. But regardless, obviously those fears that James Carville is spewing, trying to scare young people into voting for Joe Biden, who is already an authoritarian leader, already somebody who has stripped rights away from us, already somebody who has significantly weakened the fabric of American society since moving into 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue only a short 3 years ago. None of those fears that James Carville is laying at the feet of a Trump 2.0 presidency are accurate. And in fact, they are being acted out right now. Under Joe Biden, you will be trans. Under Joe Biden, you will be satanic. Under Joe Biden, you will give up your rights. Under Joe Biden, you will be treated as a second-class citizen in your own country. And when Donald Trump returns, well, the only people who have anything to worry about, Mr. Carville, are those who have sought and worked to destroy the United States of America that we love so much. Let's continue to listen.
You'll end up Christian nationalism, but that's all right, you little fucking 26-year-old. You don't feel like the election's important to me. They're not addressing the issues that I care about. Well, the New York Times Harvard Youth Poll, which is a pretty good, well-regarded thing, a guy named John Della Volpe, and very recently they gave youngsters the 10, 15 most important issues. Clocking in at number 14 was student debt. You wouldn't know that if you read the fucking press. Number 15 was the issue of Palestine. High on the list was abortion, was interest rates, was housing affordability, were all of these other things. You are being insufficiently served by the commentariat. And to some extent, you're being insufficiently served through Democratic messaging. So my advice to tell these young people to get off your motherfucking ass and go vote, because you should vote like your entire future and the entire future of this United States depends on it, because quite frankly, it does. And that's not an exaggeration.
James Carville is absolutely losing it, and I love to see it. I am here for it. He has been a filthy snake of a snake oil salesman for so many decades, constantly engaged in all sorts of just overt political rhetoric, trying to scare the nation into staying within the boundaries of the radical left-wing Democrat agenda, but it's not working. They've fractured themselves, okay? They drove wedges between all of these various political groups, and they did it so well that they broke up their own base. And you know what they did? They galvanized the rest of us together against their authoritarian rule. So James Carville is right in a sense. Your future, James, depends on it. My future also depends on it, just in a different way, because I want America to survive. I want the foundations of America to remain intact. You want to fundamentally change America in a way that you're not willing to admit. And you have worked so hard to destroy the bonds between average everyday Americans so that it's easier for you to infect them with your mind virus. And it's all it's done is make the people who you want to vote for you less inclined to do so. And it's made the people less inclined to vote for you, more inclined to vote for Donald Trump. So let's take a look at how this is working out. The radical left-wing agenda, the liberal arts education that is being applied in Ivy League institutions all around the country. We've got violent protests. Violent protests. Summer of Love 2.0, baby. And again, I'm here for it. I love watching it. Okay, because I'm not over there at Virginia State University. I'm not over there at Cornell. I'm not over there at Harvard or Princeton or Yale. No. The commies are over there at each of those institutions. They're the ones who are engaging in acts of overt violence and protest about something that the United States has nothing to do with. Okay, other than the fact that, you know, we're funding both sides of the war, but that's neither here nor there. They're asking for something that is unattainable. You know who gave them what they wanted? That was Donald Trump. Do you guys remember the Abraham Accords? Donald Trump brought peace to the Middle East. We've got over 3,700 people over here on Rumble and only 550 likes. Help me out. Help a brother out. Hit that like button. Thank you so much to the people over there on the Foxhole for hitting that red pill and for dropping a bunch of memberships, Sean, Joe. I really appreciate you. I'll go through those in just a moment. But let's take a look. What's happening at Virginia Commonwealth University? Well, it's now the epicenter of the latest violent protest. You've got pro-Hamas protesters there. They're actually occupying parts of the campus, and this is leading to a tense standoff and violence with police. You've got authorities issuing shelter-in-place orders for all students. They don't want them to go outside. They don't want them to get involved in this protest. And as of Monday morning, these violent clashes with police began because there was a group of student protesters who had established what they called a liberation zone. All this overt commie language outside the James Branch Cabell Library on VCU's Monroe Park campus. They displayed Palestinian flags. They chanted Free Palestine. They demanded an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. And they called for VCU to sever all financial ties with Israel. Good luck! I don't see the Palestinians donating millions of dollars for brand new residence halls. And that's what these college campuses need. They need the money. They need the influx of cash so that they can continue to pay their own salaries. That's why they keep raising rates at colleges, and that's why they keep lowering the quality of your education, because they don't want you to be smart enough to know the grift that they're up to. So as the days went on, they started putting up tents. We saw this over the weekend. Protesters began to fortify their positions. They built barriers around their liberation zone. And then as the day went on, it got more intense. These Hamas protesters and occupiers began to enter into the library and the courtyard. And then the police started throwing tear gas canisters. They started pepper spraying these people. They started body dropping them. There were social media posts all over the internet showing the interactions between law enforcement and the demonstrators. If you guys want to see one, I've got one for you right here. Let's take a look. This is in Richmond. Johnny says, what violence happened? A bunch of commies got their skulls cracked in by the cops. Pepper spray to the eyes. When I hear them say, stop touching me, you're not allowed to touch me, you don't have my consent. All the students inside the building are like, what the hell is going on? Oh my God. Okay, anyways, and it gets worse. It continues on. At Columbia University, these anti-Israel pro-Hamas protesters actually seized a building and they took a hostage. They took a freaking hostage and they occupied a building and they locked it from the inside so that the authorities and the police and the university could not get inside. So this is at Columbia University, and early Tuesday morning they were holding this anti-Israeli protest, and it just kept getting worse. It was just like the last one that I showed you, and they held a worker who worked inside the building hostage, and there was footage of the hostage that they released, and they started suspending students as a result of it, because they were told, if you don't get out of the building by 2 p.m., we're just going to start kicking you guys out of school. Sweet. Go ahead. Do it. Send them back to Mommy and Daddy Ayers and Mommy and Daddy Obama. At least one of the protesters smashed out the windows on the building and then barricaded them in. And it was about 12:30 at night when the protesters entered in. And one of the facilities workers said, they held me hostage, but he didn't get out. They said, the protesters chanted, "We will honor all the martyrs, all the parents, mothers, fathers. We will honor all the mothers, the martyrs, the children, sons, and daughters." And the protesters said they were going to continue to occupy the building until Columbia meets every one of our demands. Okay, good luck. Good luck. Oh, there was footage of a Palestinian flag being flown from the building. Let me show you the footage of the craziness taking place. We're protesting the thing. Let me just say, I truly believe this is probably going to end the education crisis that we have going on in America right now. A lot of these kids are going to get kicked out, and they're not going to get their tuition back. They're not going to be allowed to return to school. They're not going to be able to get into any other school, and they're probably going to have to learn to code or pick up a trade. Here they are actually occupying the building. Look, they're barricading the doors with furniture. Okay, and then I think this is the clip. Yes, this is the clip of this psychopath breaking the windows and using a club, like for you lock your car up or your bike up with. So peaceful. So peaceful. Now, here's my question. Does this guy even go to Columbia? Or is he a paid protester? That guy was like, this shit's getting too intense. I'm out of here. I don't want to lose my tuition or my spot. I just got in. Okay, we'll leave it. I'm just waiting for snipers to come out. I'll be real honest with you. Here they are breaking into the windows and climbing into the building. Oh my God. This can't go on forever, guys. This can't go on forever. I think that this is gonna just continue to build and escalate, and they're gonna be forced to respond. So yes, all of these people that you see inside there who are actually students, they're getting suspended, and they're not gonna be allowed to stay there. I think we have some different footage here in this article. No, that's the same one from a different angle. Here, oh, this is the pro-Palestinian flag. Shoot, hold on. Let me get rid of this freaking ad. Here's the pro-Palestinian banner that they're flying from inside the building that they've taken over. This is more footage of them barricading themselves.
What over here?
So yeah, number one Indiana dad said, it's a mostly peaceful protest. We will tell you what we saw. Back the blue. And then Kitsko, I'm sorry, hold on. Yeah, Kitsko says, this is an example of your tax dollars spent by Congress to NGOs. Yes, these tax dollars are about to be withdrawn from these universities. Congress has already threatened that, and it's not just the Republicans. It's also Democrats that are threatening it as well. I welcome it. Here is another Intifada flag that they've hung from Hamilton Hall. They've renamed it, too, to Heinz Hall. Oh, suspension for Gaza is the highest honor. Cool. Off with you. Take off. We'll see you later. All right, guys. So we are approaching the end of the program. We are now going to discuss the situation with Donald Trump's court cases because his trial for the so-called hush money began again this week, and it started this morning. TZ Burton says, sign the protesters up for selective service. Oh, please, please do. Send them to Gaza. Send them to Gaza if they love it so much. So President Trump, back in court today, prosecutors picked up questioning Michael Cohen's banker, a man by the name of Gary Farrow. And it all started this morning around 9:30. But Farrow was a former senior managing director of the now defunct First Republic Bank. And he was briefly on the witness stand Friday until they adjourned for today. His required attendance in court, President Trump's required attendance in court, is of course going to be limiting to his time on the campaign trail. And he's also accused of falsifying business records that he never personally touched or oversaw because he didn't have anything to do with that. So, President Trump is very honest about what this is. It's a witch hunt, all right? It was not a real case. These are not real charges. These are not real crimes. And as I said earlier in the show, President Trump is really in no legal jeopardy here. All of these efforts by the current regime to take him out of commission are only helping him. It keeps him in the news. It keeps him dominating the news cycle. And it keeps him looking as a figure of persecution by the current authoritarian regime. This is resonating with America. Donald Trump knows this. Donald Trump embraces this. Donald Trump relishes in the opportunity to tell the court to screw off, okay? He's enjoying this, believe me. Even though he could be doing other things, he recognizes that this is good for the messaging Americans need to receive. That being, a failed and corrupt establishment is using lawfare tactics to try to remove their primary contender from consideration for the office of the presidency. The same man who brought America back from the brink back in 2016, the same man who most Americans now believe was successful, especially when compared to Joe Biden, the same man who Americans also agree with on the need to shut down the southern border and deport illegal aliens that Joe Biden has allowed into the country using the power and might of the American military. So just taking a look at President Trump speaking out about this. He had the opportunity to make some comments outside of the courtroom today before he came in. And he talked specifically about Jack Smith. Remember yesterday we discussed the recently revealed warrant, affidavit, and of course the transcripts, which show conclusively that Jack Smith's trial has been orchestrated by Joe Biden and the White House, and that it was all a setup from the very beginning. That's exactly what President Trump said as he stood outside the court. He also mentioned on Truth Social, wow, it looks like deranged Jack Smith, a psycho, got caught. A sick psycho got caught. Big stuff. See story in Rob Schmidt opening on Newsmax. Amazing. Make America great again. Let's go ahead and take a look at President Trump speaking to the American people from outside the New York State Supreme Courthouse. We will watch the entire
thing. Thank you very much. So we begin again. This is a case that should never have been brought. Every single major legal scholar, Jonathan Turley, Greg Jarrett, Andy McCarthy, Dershowitz, every single scholar, Mark Levin, the great Mark Levin, had a whole show on it last night, said that this is a disgraceful case. It's a disgrace to the New York state and city court system. And all of the cases are, frankly. All of them are. You probably saw last night.
Wait a second. I actually forgot to show you guys something in regards to the Columbia story. This is one of the people who took over the building. She's a young woman who's part of the protesters, and she is demanding that Columbia University deliver food and water to the same people who illegally occupied a building and held a hostage at Columbia University. This is just a spectacular divorce from reality right here. I got to play this for you.
They may be obligated to provide food to people who have taken over a building.
First of all, we're saying that they're obligated to provide food to students who pay for a meal plan here.
But you mentioned that there was a request that food and water be brought in, unless I misunderstood.
To allow it to be brought in. I mean, well, I guess it's ultimately a question of what kind of community and obligation Columbia feels it has to its...
First of all, look at this twink back... This guy wearing this little half shirt and a half jacket. Isn't it cold there? Oh, my God.
Do you want students to die of dehydration and starvation or get severely ill, even if they disagree with you? If the answer is no, then you should allow basic... I mean, it's crazy to say because we're on an Ivy League campus, but this is, like, basic humanitarian aid we're asking for. Like, could people please have a glass of water?
Is that normal for terrorists... to demand basic provisions if they're too stupid to bring, like, a pack of, I don't know, toaster tart strudels and maybe a couple of bottles of water. Like, what morons? These kids are so entitled. And I hope they starve them out. I hope that they all leave in about 6 hours clutching their bellies, demanding that the university provide them their tater tots and their bagels that they should have gotten in the meal hall that morning, but they were too busy taking over and occupying a building.
They did put themselves in that very deliberately in that situation and in that position. So it seems like you're sort of saying, we want to be revolutionaries. We want to take over this building. Now would you please bring us food and water?
And I don't know if you can hear him, but he's like, you know, it doesn't really sit right. It seems like you're saying we want to be revolutionaries. We want to be, radicals, but we also need you to bring us food because mommy and daddy didn't send us in with our meal cards. And since we're occupying the building, we can't make it to the cafeteria. Somebody said that these aren't kids. These are adults. You know, I'm referring to them as kids in a derisive way. I realize that all of them are probably over the age of 18, but they're also morons. And I don't think that they deserve to be referred to as adults until the time that they actually are convicted in a court of law.
Asking them to bring anything, we're asking them to not violently stop us from bringing in basic humanitarian aid.
They're stopping the delivery of food.
We are looking for a commitment from them that they will not stop it violently.
They haven't stopped it.
I don't know to what extent it has been attempted, but we're looking for a commitment.
Okay, she wants to be presented as a victim who has just taken forcible occupation of a building on a public university or private. I don't even know if they're public or private, but it's an Ivy League university. And they haven't even stopped food from being delivered. They just want Grubhub to show up. Like, order your freaking Grubhub. Okay? Stop belly aching. Stop whining. But I sincerely hope that the university is going to stand in the way of anybody bringing these radicals provisions. Scott, oh, thank you to, hold on. Who was that? Was that QPatriot Angel over here on Ko-Fi? Hang on. Let me see who that was. Yes, QPatriot Angel. Thank you very much. Okay, appreciate you. And then also over here on Rumble, I need to say thank you to Scott, who says, didn't forget you, bro. Thanks for your hard work. Scott, good to see you, buddy. I'm glad to know you're out there. Oh, my God. Yes, yes, this guy behind her, he's like, does this sound as stupid as it sounds to me? Like, why are we demanding food and water be brought in? Aren't we terrorists? I thought we were revolutionaries. Is that normal? Do revolutionaries normally get fed by the people they're attacking? I don't think so. Okay, here is... Here is Donald Trump continuing to make his comments about the setup of the Biden administration in the Jack Smith trial for the D.C. in Miami for the classified documents.
The Jack Smith got caught with his hand in the cookie jar. It was released late last night, and it's a big story. The documents case is a hoax. created by them for election interference purposes. And so that one looks like it's going asunder. A brilliant judge saw some facts, and I haven't read what was revealed yet. It just came out. But the document hoax is indeed, it is indeed a hoax. The whole thing is a hoax. All of them are hoaxes, including the civil cases. They're controlled by the White House. They're controlled by Democrat judges and prosecutors that were put there specifically. They hate Trump. And the people are getting it. That's why we just came out. A new Emerson poll just was released about 2 minutes ago. And I'm leading by a lot in every swing state and leading in the general election. And you saw the CNN poll. I'm sure they aren't too happy with it, but the CNN poll was fantastic. So we're here. This is a hoax. This is a judge who's conflicted. Badly, badly, badly conflicted. I've never seen a judge so conflicted. And giving us virtually no rulings. I hear I'm not even allowed to say advice of counsel. This is a new one to me. Yeah. Advice of counsel. When you have a lawyer and the lawyer does something or advises you on something, you say advice of counsel. He said you're not allowed to say that. And so you'll all figure it out. But I think the public has figured it out because the poll numbers are the highest they've ever been. And I appreciate you treated me, actually, I thought, quite fairly. At least the people here, which is a lot of people.
Here's the thing. This has backfired so spectacularly, and this goes back to the theme of the show. The implosion of the plan of the deep state, all of their machinations are literally falling apart. They are crumbling before their very eyes. Trisha says, I heard they're letting him go to Barron's graduation. We will be talking about that in just a moment. I just wanted to get through Trump's remarks.
And I appreciate that. The Biden protests that are going on are horrible. It's all caused by him because he doesn't know how to speak. He can't put two sentences together. He's got to get out and make a statement because the colleges are being overrun in this country. The anti-Semitism, all of the problems going on, they're being overrun. I've never seen anything like it. He said he ran because of Charlottesville. Well, if the people that know Charlottesville, when you extend the statement, it's a big hoax what they say was said. And they understand that. And Charlottesville is peanuts compared to what you're looking at now. Yep. This whole country is up in arms, breaking into colleges, knocking the hell out of Columbia University. I mean, they took over. I know the building very well. They took over a building. That is a big deal. And I wonder if what's going to happen to them will be anything comparable to what happened to J6.
I wonder.
Because they're doing a lot of destruction, a lot of damages, a lot of people getting hurt very badly. I wonder if that's going to be the same kind of treatment they gave J6. Let's see how that all works out. I think I can give you the answer right now. And that's why people have lost faith in our court system. So the Biden protests are a disaster, and he hasn't even made a statement, because he's not capable of making a statement. I'm still waiting for him to debate. He said on the very lowly rated Howard Stern show, he said, very strong, I want to debate. Well, we haven't seen it. But we would love to debate any time, and I think it's a good time to have a debate, even though it's early. But 6 months is pretty close. November 5th is going to go down as the most important day in the history of our country because we're going to turn our country around. Our country
yes, we will, Mr. President.
It's going to hell. It's very sad to see. But November 5th is going to be the most important day in the history of our country. So I'm going to go into this trial. I'm going to sit in a freezing cold icebox for 8 hours, 9 hours or so. They took me off the campaign trail. But the good news is my poll numbers are the highest they've ever been, so
yes.
At least we're getting the word out. And everybody knows this trial is a scam. It's a scam. The judge should be recused, and he should recuse himself today. It's the most recusable judge I've been called, recusal abuse. And he should recuse himself today. And maybe he will. Maybe he'll do the right thing. But really, more importantly than the recusal, he should terminate the case today. The judge should terminate the case because they have no case. As Jonathan Turley said, as all of them said, every single one of them, Dershowitz, McCarthy, everyone, Greg Jarrett, Mark Levin, they all said this case should be ended immediately. This case is over. It should be ended immediately.
And many of them are not fans of mine, but they want to do the right thing for the country. So I appreciate you being here. Thank you very much. And I'm going to go into the icebox now and sit for about 8 hours or 9 hours. I'd much rather be in Georgia. I'd much rather be in Florida. I'd much rather be in states that are in play, states that, I'd like to be able to campaign. Biden's out campaigning. If you call it campaigning, he can't campaign because every time he opens his mouth, he gets in trouble. But Biden is out campaigning very nicely. I think when I start campaigning, he'll stop. He'll go back into his basement. But I want to thank everybody. You've really been treating me very fair. I want to thank Time Magazine. They did a cover story, which is very nice. And it's actually, there's at least 60%. It's at least 60% correct, which is about all I can ask for. So I want to thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Are you getting part of the crowd?
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Mr. President. So, that is the next story, is that, yes, despite what a dick Judge Marchand is and how badly he should be recused and how obviously this case is a hoax and another fraud and Donald Trump does not deserve to go through this insane treatment, being persecuted yet again in a case that should have no place in a courtroom, has absolutely no true crimes that have been committed, and even if they were crimes, he wasn't the one that committed them. The judge has finally agreed to allow Donald Trump to attend Barron's graduation. On May 17th, he's set to graduate from Oxbridge Academy. That's in West Palm Beach, Florida. And the judge has now granted it during the hearing that was held shortly after President Trump made those statements. Now, it wasn't the only thing that happened during that courtroom appearance. There was a number of other instances that we're going to be talking about in a moment. Marchand did not grant President Trump's attendance at the Supreme Court's oral arguments back on April 25th. Obviously, that was very important. President Trump would have loved to have been there. He didn't allow President Trump to spend Melania's birthday with her. And I am actually very surprised that he's allowing him to go to Barron's graduation, because Judge Marchand has been a real piece of work up until this point. Now, he did hold Donald Trump in criminal contempt for the supposed gag order violations, and he threatened him with jail time. Now, despite the knowledge that Marchand was going to do this, Donald Trump has continued to speak out. Donald Trump has continued to mention Judge Marchand. He just did it in that statement before he walked into the courtroom. He does it daily on Truth Social. So, Marchand has found that Donald Trump violated the gag order. He's held him in contempt, and he's threatening him with jail time if there are any further infractions. I predict that there will be further infractions. He's also told President Trump to remove the 7 offending posts. I don't think President Trump is going to do that either. I think that President Trump is going to leave those posts up, daring Judge Marchand to put him in jail. Texan by birth, Kelly, good to see you. She says, Zach, you are great. Love being here in person. I'm so glad you're here, too. Good to see you. Thank you very much. And then Buck Wayne says, the number of Trump supporters is growing daily and exponentially, folks. And by the Democrats' own words and deeds, be encouraged and cheerful, friends. I love your show, Zach, and your faithful audience. Thank you so much, Buck. And I echo your sentiments. It is exactly the way I feel. I see it happening in the real world. I see it on a daily basis. People are coming over to the idea of making America great again, and at least putting America first, and at least making America secure. You simply cannot live in a nation that is overrun by lawless criminals and illegal aliens coming from every corner of the globe. It's an untenable position to hold, and people understand that the only person who's going to help us get this solved is Donald Trump, because it's the policies of Donald Trump that stopped this from happening previously. It's the policies of Joe Biden and the unraveling of Donald Trump's policies that allowed it to take place at all. So, Judge Marchand said this: defendant is hereby warned by the court not to tolerate continued willful violations of the lawful orders, and that if necessary and appropriate under the circumstances, it will impose an incarceratory punishment. So, Donald Trump is ordered to pay $1,000 for each of the 9 violations, and he has to pay it by the close of business on Friday, May 3rd. That'll be the end of this week. If he doesn't do that, then Marchand might throw him in jail as well. He said that he has the authority to put Trump in jail jail for up to 30 days for violating his gag order. Now, Alvin Bragg actually backed down from asking the judge to jail Trump for allegedly violating the gag order. I think Alvin Bragg is starting to see that this is not going the way that he had hoped. And if they put President Trump in jail, all they're going to do is make him even more powerful. They're going to make him more popular with the American people. So I say it again. Go do your worst, Judge Marchand. Just try it. Just try it and see what happens, okay? Because the American people are going to respond by supporting Donald Trump. They will flock to him en masse in an even greater number than they are right now. You will be the author of your own demise, the architect of your own destruction, if you choose to behave in the way that you have thus far. So President Trump called Bragg's bluff. He said back in April it would be a great honor to spend time in jail and become a modern-day Nelson Mandela in the clink, as he said. But these gag order violations are in regard to his public comments, and he continues to make public comments. He continues to talk about the witnesses. I think it's a foregone conclusion. He's essentially daring Marchand to throw him in jail, and Bragg, he knows it's a bad idea, so we'll see where it goes. Now, importantly, Jonathan Turley, who is a lawyer that I greatly respect, he is very intelligent, he has a lot of really good takes on a lot of this stuff. He's currently a law professor at George Washington University, and he said that the judge, Judge Marchand, has committed a reversible error by allowing prosecutors to make certain arguments. And this kind of goes back to what I was talking about with Harvey Weinstein at the beginning of the show. The judge in that case did the exact same thing. The things that the prosecutors are saying in this case should not be said. Now, these indictments from Alvin Bragg, the 34 felonies, the $130,000 that Stormy Daniels was paid, Judge Marchand has erred by allowing Bragg's team, which is led by Michael Colangelo, a former Biden DOJ official who served as acting associate attorney general, to make the claim that Trump was involved in violating federal election laws. He wasn't. We already know this. So let's actually take a listen to Jonathan Turley discuss this salient point. Oh, we gotta wait for the commercial. I hate these TikTok ads. Okay. This is an ad for National University. I don't know anything about them. But you can apply today, it says. Oh, it's from the DOD.
Anything secret at all? Back to you guys in the studio.
All right. Thanks so much, Eric. Yeah, let's bring in Jonathan Turley. Let's bring him back. He was on last hour talking about the riots, and we'll talk about them again as they spread across 20 states. But I do want to talk about what's happening.
I didn't realize it was that widespread. 20 states, there's riots right now for pro-Palestine stuff? Wow, that's crazy. Okay.
The trial with Donald Trump, it's going to be Tuesday, Thursday, Friday this week. They'll have a day off Wednesday. He's going to campaign. Why is it important for today's witness to be the banker? What's the prosecution trying to do?
Well, this is a housekeeping witness, so it's going to be as exciting as watching paint drying. He's going to be talking about such interesting topics as setting up an LLC. The funny thing is a lot of these witnesses are proving stuff that's not being contested. Nobody contests that the check was written, that it was through an LLC, but they're going to lay through that foundation, and all of this is to be the sort of prequel to Michael Cohen.
What's interesting about Michael Cohen being the key witness, you were telling us this during the commercial break, you said he was the one that gave Donald Trump this advice. He was his lawyer. So Donald Trump took his advice, and now he's going to take the stand and say what Donald Trump did was illegal.
Right. It's bad enough when you bring in a person's own counsel to testify against him. But Michael Cohen is literally going to tell that jury, please send my client to jail for following my legal advice. All of the stuff that they're talking about, he set up. He structured this, and he told his client that we could do this. And it's a bizarre moment. But I got to tell you, I think this judge may have already committed reversible error. Now, he could try to amend it, he could try to change it in his instructions, but that jury has now been told repeatedly that there are federal election crimes here, strongly suggesting that the payment to Stormy Daniels did violate federal election laws.
Sure.
That's just not true.
It's not true. And even if it was, it would be a crime that Donald Trump is not accused of in this civil trial. And that would be exactly what happened to Harvey Weinstein. Now, I bristle at the fact that I have to compare these two cases, but we're in the state of New York for both of them. And it appears that the judges in these cases in the state of New York are either just so corrupt and so focused on the prosecution itself that they don't care about the rules. But in the case of Donald Trump and Judge Juan Marchand, obviously he hates him so much and he wants to see him destroyed that he is willing to forego the normal decorum that is supposed to exist in a courtroom. Continuing with Jonathan.
Speaking of crimes.
Oh, actually, that's the end of his statement. All right. So now I know that you guys don't want to see President Trump go to jail. Nobody wants to see President Trump go to jail. All right. Nobody wanted to see him be given a mugshot. But I ask you to consider the meme that is created by that. This right here is a symbol of the lawfare that Donald Trump is being forced to endure at the hands of an authoritarian and illegal government. This meme of Donald Trump in a mugshot on a coffee cup given to me by Vector117, make sure you're subscribed, is a powerful statement. It's a powerful tool to educate the masses about what must not be allowed to happen. It is a powerful reminder of what's at stake if America does not act and does not get behind Donald John Trump. I say to you, the exact same thing will happen if Donald Trump is forced into a New York jail, never forgetting that the Secret Service will be with him 24 hours a day and he will be the only person inside that wing. Donald Trump will be entirely insulated and he will be in no danger whatsoever. The indignity that you feel at the idea of President Trump being put in jail for something that he should not be in jail for, everyone feels it. And that is where the power lies. That will be the thought in the minds of every single man, woman, and child who learns about the decision of Judge Juan Marchand to put Donald Trump in that jail cell, even up to 30 days. The longer, the worse, but also the longer, the better for the power and the impact of that message. So you are meant to be angry by that action. You are meant to feel the ire and the just complete disgust at what these people are willing to do to our president. And Donald Trump knows that, and he will harness that. He will use that as a powerful tool for messaging to the American people so that in November, they will rally around him and he will defeat our enemies. He will then hold them accountable in his second administration, and we will fundamentally reshape America to create the nation that we were meant to be living in, not this communist hellscape that we're currently existing in. We are meant to thrive. We are meant to be ensconced in life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They have taken that away from us. And they take more away from us on a daily basis. And it's not just us watching this program or sitting here talking to you on the air. It's the entirety of the American people, not the illegals, not the bad actors, but the plebs, us, the little people, the average Americans who suffer daily as a result of their decisions, as a result of their refusal to enforce the law. These things that are happening to us are going to be the very unraveling of their plans, because it's galvanizing us, the American people, behind this man right here, Donald Trump. So you take the terrible things that you see in your life, you take these decisions that they've made, and you use them to your benefit. You use them to set yourself free. You use them to save this country and to support Donald Trump, so that we can begin a new golden age here in America, so that we can remake this nation and undo the terrible things that they've done. Many, many people feel exactly the same way as I, okay? And Time Magazine, they've just released a major new coverage on President Trump, and they've boldly and succinctly lined up what his second administration is going to be. Look, I used it for the thumbnail. Look, you can see it. It's in black and white. If he wins. It's meant to be terrifying. I mean, and certainly it is terrifying to the deep state. But to someone like us, we see it. We see it and we say, yes, when he wins, you will be quaking in your boots. You, the people who hate America, who want to destroy Donald Trump, who want to destroy his legacy, who want to destroy us, you won't be successful. You're not going to win because Donald Trump is going to return. And when he does, there's a lot that's coming back with him. So there was a long form interview with President Trump and this journalist, Eric Cortellesa. He establishes that Trump's key failing in his first term in office is exactly what I've said in the past. It's that he did not go far enough. He didn't use the power of the presidency enough. Okay? He didn't want to be seen as a dictator because that's what they portrayed him as regardless. So what is a Trump 2.0 administration going to be? It's going to be Trump coming back and going hard. Going hard. Going after his enemies. Bringing justice back to America. That's what Trump 2.0 is going to bring. The journalist who interviewed President Trump, he said that Trump is planning his retribution through a series of policies, which include mass deportation, gutting of the deep state, and pardoning of those involved in the January 6th protests. It's just the start, my friends. It's just the beginning. That's a taste. Okay, that's day one. Sabrina says, amen, Zach. Thank you. I'm so glad we are back to normal. You are my news now. This is getting fun. I'm glad to hear it because it's fun for me, too. I love coming here every day, and I love being able to do this. Of course, the article was also riddled with the same type of left-wing bullshit that you would expect from a rag like Time Magazine. But the ultimate point is that on day one, Donald Trump returns and so does law and order, and retribution begins. Does that mean that the Department of Retribution with Ivan Ranklin is going to be introduced? I don't know, but I'd like to think so. All right, I think that we're going to go ahead and end it there. I got a couple of more stories, but I'm starting to lose my voice, and I need to save it because obviously I got multiple shows to do tomorrow. I have another interview I got to do tonight. So thank you very much to everybody over there on Rumble who has donated. Let me also say thank you to all of my friends over here at Pilled. We're going to go through that one lastly here. Thank you to Paul Thaddeus for dropping that can. Also to Hogleg71 for the can. Thank you to Sean Joe for dropping a cookie and a whole slew of bronze tier subscriptions. Looks like you dropped 1, 2, 3, 4 subscriptions, and those were all picked up. So thank you, guys. Thank you to Judy for dropping that cookie. Thank you to Sean Joe for dropping another cookie. Thank you to Who Cares, who says, forcing your enemy to feed you is a Hamas routine. Look at Israel and Gaza. Yeah, absolutely. You're totally right. Thank you to Sean Joe for that cookie. And then thank you to Hogleg, who says, cool shirt, Zach. Great show. Thank you very much. It is Taco Tuesday. Lisa and I are going to go get some. I appreciate every single one of you. I'm going to go ahead and pass out these gold pills. Yes, release the Kraken. Oh, you guys, this is good times, man. This is good times. Yeah, things are difficult, but, you know, through suffering comes great things. You know, we're going to come through the eye of this needle, the eye of the storm, if you will. We're going to come out on the other side, and it's going to be a beautiful, bright, shining day. And America will prevail. You and I, we're going to be okay. Everything is going to be okay. But we've got a lot of tough work ahead of us. So pick yourself up by your bootstraps, tie those on, and then get ready to do some hard work because we're about to get dirty come November. All right, you guys, gold pills are being passed out. I appreciate and love every single one of you. I need you, before you leave, hit the like button. If you are watching this program on Rumble and you have not hit the like button yet, please hit the like button. I would really, really appreciate it. We got over 4,000 people here and just over 823 likes. I feel like the same 823 people hit the like button before I end the show. Now for the rest of you, the other roughly 3,000 people or so who are out there and who haven't hit the like button yet, please hit it. If you're over there on Pilled and you have not hit the red pill, please consider doing so. Help me out by sharing the show. The more likes I get on this broadcast on Rumble, the more likely it is I end up on the Rumble leaderboard, and then the more likely other people are going to see the program. I already told you about the sponsors of the first first portion of the program. That's going to be my friends at C60 Evo. Head on over to c60evo.com/redpill78. Use code redpill78 to save an additional 10% off. Don't forget about my sponsor at Patriot Gold Group. When you head on over to patriotgoldgroup.com/p/redpill-news, or even easier, call 888-857-6092. All of that information is in the description below this video. And then finally, my friends at OneNessDrops.com, head on over to OneNessDrops.com. And of course, it doesn't work. Let me just fix it real quick and then I can show you the website. All right, OneNessDrops.com. Hold on. Is there another thing in there? I think there is. No, it's just OneNessDrops.com, and when you use code RP78, you save 15% off your chlorine dioxide water purification kits. Right here, it's parts A and B. You mix it together, you chemically create a reaction which produces chlorine dioxide, which is antibacterial, antimicrobial, antiviral. It will clean unsafe drinking water and make it potable or good for you to drink. You can always have this around and keep it in your go bag, keep it in your medicine cabinet, keep it in your car, because you never know what's going to happen. Let's say you pop a tire and you don't have a spare and you're out in the middle of nowhere and you don't have any water, but you're walking by a bubbling brook and you don't know whether or not it's safe to drink. If you have chlorine dioxide in your vehicle, then you can make it safe to drink. OneNessDrops.com, use code RP78, save 15% off. If you want to use crypto, you can use crypto RP7830 and you'll get 30% off your order instead. And then, of course, you know, you can always pick up a Rife machine. There is a whole bunch of different sponsors that are sponsors of the program. You can check it out in the description of this video. My mods have been passing it out the whole time. Thank you very much to everybody for supporting the show, whether it's here on the live broadcast or if it's on my website or if it's on Subscribestar or any other platform. I really do appreciate you guys. Good luck. God bless. I'll see you tomorrow, 5 p.m., for another episode of Red Pill News Live. Keep it up.